This is Deconstructing Dinner on Kootenai Co-op Radio.
And here we are at the inaugural broadcast of Deconstructing Dinner here on Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia. I'm your host, John Steinman. For you listeners outside the Nelson area, via our station's live internet feed, I welcome all of you to our community here in Nelson and this community-sponsored and supported radio station. For those of you who are perhaps not familiar with Kootenai Co-op Radio, we are a volunteer-driven, not-for-profit radio station here in Nelson that has now been broadcasting for over 5 years. All the financial support for the station comes from either members or local businesses that sponsor our shows. As the first broadcast of Deconstructing Dinner, tonight's show will revolve around the concept and the objective of the show itself. Essentially, tonight's show will be an introduction and a glimpse into the range of topics and issues that this program will attempt to deconstruct and discuss. But more importantly, the theme of today's show is, why should we be deconstructing our dinner? Why should we make efforts to fully understand the chain of events that led to that moment before we place a forkful of food into our mouths? And in answering this very question, we are going to hear from a number of individuals why they think we should be deconstructing our dinner, and by doing so, hopefully achieve a better understanding of the issues facing our food supply here in this province, and sending this show on its way to better educating British Columbians about the food choices we make every day. One thing I was hoping to do at the beginning of each show is provide some sort of anecdote or joke of sorts to get things rolling, and I hadn't actually prepared anything for tonight's show, but just before leaving my house to make my way down to the radio station tonight, I was cleaning up after a light meal, and when I went to go throw out some of the scraps into the compost bin underneath the sink, I opened the bin, and these smells that were coming out of the bin reminded me of those intensely flavored brand-name potato chips, like I think one of those ketchup-flavored ones or smoky bacon, if those even still exist as flavors, but I remember as a child coming home and bringing food that I had bought with a pocket full of change at the school cafeteria, and I remember my mother would look at these bags of chips that I would bring home, like these ketchup chips, and she would say, "What are you doing with that garbage?" And at that time, I didn't know how right she was. But to matters at hand, given tonight's show is an introduction to the show itself, I thought it important to mention that as this weekly broadcast of Deconstructing Dinner progresses throughout the year, you can expect to tune into far more focused topics on the issues surrounding perhaps the farming practices that were involved in producing your box of breakfast cereal. Were these farming practices carried out through organic principles of agriculture, or were they cultivated using the assistance of chemical pesticides or herbicides? And what exactly are these pesticides and herbicides composed of, and what implications does the use of these chemicals have on our health and our environment? Is there really a benefit from purchasing organic food? Were the farming practices that contributed to your box of breakfast cereal achieved locally, or were they carried out thousands of miles away? We will discuss the state of our province's fisheries and the issues surrounding the increasing prevalence of aquaculture or fish farming operations, and by doing so, a glance into the seafood bins at the grocery store will contain a much more detailed history behind how all those items got there. We'll dig deeper into the connection between our food supply and increasing rates of poor health and disease in this country, and I could easily go on and on listing all these topics, but ultimately, in the end, I think we can hope that by discussing and exposing our food supply, we can learn how to become more involved in determining what food is available to us and how each of us can play a role in influencing these choices. But that in itself will be an issue that we'll discuss here on this show in the next few weeks, the right that we as British Columbians and as Canadians and human beings have to food, because the more and more that these decisions are in fact placed into boardrooms thousands of miles away, the more we lose this very right we all deserve. With food being a major element of all of our lives, the goal behind this show is to reach as many British Columbians as possible, and it's really exciting to actually mention that word about Deconstructing Dinner has been circulating throughout the province. I've received responses recently and comments from people in Vancouver, Victoria, Nanaimo, some of the communities around Parksville, for example. And what's even more exciting was just recently receiving some emails all the way from Ontario, Nova Scotia, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and next door in Lethbridge, Alberta. And this is only the first broadcast. But over the course of the next few months, efforts are going to be made to syndicate this show on community radio stations throughout the province and ensure that all British Columbians can be exposed to these issues that affect us all. A little bit about the show's website, and Again, I'll remind you that all broadcasts are going to be archived. So if you do miss a show, if you have to take maybe a bathroom break, no worries. You'll be able to listen again on the show's website. The website is also going to act as a source to further inform those of you listening to either alternate sources of information or sources referred to on the show. You'll be able to get a glimpse into the topics that will be covered in weeks to come. And what I really want to stress is that given the importance and influence that issues surrounding food have on all of us, if at any time you feel that urge to respond to the program itself or simply donate a response to a topic covered, there's contact info on the website, and I'll be making an effort to repeat those comments here on the show. I really want to encourage hearing ideas from people because I want this show to be for the people. And quickly, that website is www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner, one word. And if you didn't quite catch that, I'll repeat that address at the end of the show. On the show today, we will be hearing from a number of British Columbians who will be answering the question, why deconstruct our dinner, with the hope that the responses will shed light onto the nature of this show and the path it will take each week. But before we get to them, I wanted to share my own vision behind this program. I know as the weeks progress, I intend to open the microphone up to as many people other than myself, so I'm going to use this first show as an extended opportunity to share this vision. And that vision is to provide you and I with a vast range of information that, in the end, will hopefully allow us to better understand the food we purchase and eventually put into our bodies. Earlier today, I was interviewing Abra Brin and pre-recording an interview that we'll hear later on. Abra is affiliated with the Kootenai Organic Grower Society, and she handed me a little booklet here that she wrote, I think, back in 1999. And it was entitled A Canadian Consumer's Guide to Ingredients, which may have been genetically engineered. And it wasn't the title that actually caught my eye, but it was the subtitle. And the subtitle is How to Become a Detective in Your Own Food System. And that is a great way to summarize how I think this show is going to progress. In essence, we are going to be detectives in our food system. But the troubling element to this subtitle is the word own. And we certainly do not own our food system right now, because if we did, we would not have to be a detective. I think there has already been some confusion that, well, a show about food must be a show about cooking, and I want to stress that this is certainly not a show that will be discussing recipes and exotic cuisines and traditions from around the world, so you can put your spatulas away. But granted, as much merit that recipes and cuisine deserves, and truth be told, it is incredibly important to know how to compile ingredients together to make a meal or simply understand a menu at a restaurant. But what good is a recipe and what good is a meal or a snack if we don't fully understand the history behind those ingredients, the history behind the countless products we find on grocery store shelves, but most importantly, the impact that all of our purchases have on not only ourselves, but on our communities and the health of this planet. And that's just it. Each and every person around the globe needs to eat. And because our food choices have such an effect on that which exists around us, ultimately, food is that major component of our lives that connects every human being on this planet. And it's for that reason that discussing our food choices holds such a high level of importance. With food having such a role in shaping the very social fabric that holds everything around us together, discussing and understanding the food that's available to us should be one of the most democratic processes within this country. And Deconstructing Dinner aims to be a forum for that very process. If we quickly look back at the connection Canadians had to our food supply, food was most commonly purchased in markets or from local bakeries or butchers where the origins of the food were known, and any questions about that food could be answered. That producer or farmer had a face, and they cared just as much about the well-being of the community as those purchasing the food. And these options still exist, but comparatively speaking, in an incredibly short period of time, our options to purchase food have become increasingly limited to those products available in large supermarkets, where these products have gone through countless channels to eventually make their way into the produce section or the aisle containing bottled beverages and bagged potato chips. And as is now the case, we have lost sight of where this food has come from, and the food options that are now most available to us are these very products without a face. But let's face it, our current lifestyles here in this country have allowed our options for food to become as limited as they are. Canadians are spending increasing amounts of time at our jobs, commuting to and from these jobs as we work towards accumulating an increasing range of material desires, all of which leads to a decreasing amount of time available to reflect upon the origins of the food we purchase and eat. And this works out perfectly for the mega-sized supermarkets and industrial producers of food, because the ease at which Corners can now be cut, increases alongside these lifestyle changes, and essentially these conveniences, these cut corners, are becoming almost a necessity in order to facilitate these modern lifestyles, but also facilitate the regulations that favor industrial food production and agriculture. I quickly want to remind listeners that you're listening to Deconstructing Dinner. My name is John Steinman. As I mentioned earlier, we will be hearing responses tonight from a number of British Columbians who have been posed the question, why should we be deconstructing our dinner? Why should we understand the food we choose to buy instead of just simply tossing it into the shopping cart and popping it into the microwave? Answering this question over the phone yesterday from their office in Fanny Bay on Vancouver Island was Frank Moreland and Sandra Mark of Edible Strategies. Since meeting in 1998, Frank and Sandra have worked and volunteered together in food-related community economic development and cooperative development. Both are passionate about arming communities with the necessary tools to become economically viable. Sandra teaches at the University of Victoria's School of Social Work, where she teaches community development. Here's Sandra Mark and why she thinks British Columbians should be deconstructing their dinner.
We need to deconstruct dinner because if we don't, we're going to not have too much dinner in the future. In my view, the food system is, as it exists right now, is heading towards a real big blow-up because it's based upon the oil transportation, transporting things from one country to another country. And when, as oil becomes more and more expensive and unavailable, we'll be in really big trouble. So that's one thing. The other thing is that people are really concerned about their health and recognizing that they got to maybe eat a lot better than they are. And I think as consumers become aware, then we are seeing changes, as Frank has mentioned. But communities have been really challenged by their relationship with food. And this is based upon the shifts in the centralization of the food system over the last 40 years that have really destroyed all the infrastructure that facilitated agriculture and food preparation in BC and actually all over the world at the community level, because all the food production has been centralized through the big multinational corporations. And so we used to be able to feed ourselves really nicely here in BC on the island. We used to export food to the mainland. There was lots of food processing going on all throughout the province, and now the whole idea of adding value to food is almost like a whole new idea that has to be completely reincorporated into the farmer and rural lifestyle, because, the infrastructure has been decimated. In the urban areas, we've just been involved working with a group of folks looking at the Vancouver food system. And, you know, the urban system is even more terrifying because, you know, if push comes to shove, people are not ready to be able to grow their own. I mean, in the rural areas like us, we can throw a few things in and we could probably keep on feeding ourselves. But in the urban areas, it's problematic. However, there's examples in many countries where people in urban areas are actually feeding themselves in urban areas, by having built an infrastructure, created the training and the support necessary. It's possible. You know, we can feed ourselves. We can feed ourselves wonderful food. But we can't unless we realize that we've got to do something about what's happening right now. So, it's an urgent problem from my point of view. Read your labels. See where the product was grown. See who owns the company that has sent you the product. Go back to your computer, look them up, and discover whether they're not one of the big five. Try and make choices that favor local or BC companies or even Canadian companies. There are lots of small companies trying to get going again. So we need to really work hard to find out the right information. And a lot of the work that we're doing is helping people brand their products and develop community branding strategies so that kind of information can be available to consumers. This is quite a difficult thing to do for a whole bunch of technical reasons, primarily led by the big companies who want to make sure that labeling really favors their approach to doing things. So it's a challenge, but it's not an impossible thing, but it requires people to cooperate at a regional level, growers, small-scale processors, distributors, and so on. If people all cooperate, then they can get this information to consumers, and consumers will very much move towards buying local, buying organic, buying Canadian, if they know that that's authentically what they are, in fact, buying. Right now, we have identified a large number of inauthentic local labels where big companies are just putting a fake local label on, and people, you know, think, oh, this is great. I can buy milk that's actually grown here in my area. And, you know, it's a big multinational corporation. It's got nothing to do with the local area. So they're able to get away with all kinds of things by just playing the edges there. So we need to, as community folks, as people concerned about food, at the regional level and provincially, community people have to say we need the right information on our food so that we can make the choices we want to make.
And that was Sandra Mark of Edible Strategies. And here's Frank Moreland, also of Edible Strategies, with his response to why British Columbians should deconstruct their dinner.
I think the reason we need to start looking at deconstructing our dinner is that we've given it our nutritional health up to the decisions made by scientists and the food retailers. We used to have local systems and delivering nutritious food to people, but there wasn't enough of an income to keep people working on the farm. And in the last 20 years, we've been losing farms at an outrageous rate. And when I look at my own youth, I didn't stay on the family farm either, a dairy farm in Ontario. I came to BC to look for high-paying jobs in forestry, mining, fishing, construction. Nobody really stayed on the farm. So as the farms have declined and we've given it up to a centralized food system, we've also given up our knowledge of the true benefits and the nutrition and who made the food and is it good for us. We're finding more and more that reports are coming out and whistleblowers in Canada Health are getting fired because they want to tell the public that the food is being made to preserve its shelf life and its appearance and to make it homogenous for the global market. But the considerations are not being made for the safe food consumption by people and eaters. So with this great disconnect and this trust that we're seeing it's being eroded and they're finally making changes at the transnational level to actually respond to consumer demand and take the trans fats out of foods and start producing organic products. But the problem is that they don't have social justice or ecological guidelines to produce organic products. They just want to be able to make the product and test it. But with these international rules that don't have social justice or ecological integrity combined with the organics, it's actually possibly worse to be eating organic tomatoes flown in from Mexico than it is to be eating local tomatoes from the farmer you know down the street. But it's unfortunate our connection with the rural 15% of the population that is growing the food has been disconnected, and a lot of the urban areas don't really know where the food comes from. So any programming or any kind of information that can get out to the common public, because I say common as opposed to the activists, the other food activists that are working to get people to change their consumer habits. There is a converted group that already knows that we need to be changing the food system, but the deconstructing message has to go into the mainstream. It was once the mainstream got a hold of organics, it's been growing double digits for the last 15 years, mainly because the mainstream market is buying and voting with their dollars. If we can really deconstruct supper or dinner and have people understand that they can vote with their dollars on local food like they're voting with organic food, we can have double growth, economic growth in the rural areas for authentic local branded products. So one way to get the mainstream of people knowing or demanding the local products, authentic local products, is through the educational process of showing them the 2,000 kilometers or miles that the food is traveling now and how that's damaging our ecological integrity and how it's exploiting slave labor in Mexico and foreign labor that we fly to Canada. So that's why I think that it's important that we really need to deconstruct where our dinner comes from and how that will work out into actually supporting local food infrastructures. Dr. Andrew Weil made a speech in Victoria a little while ago, and he was talking about he was one of the original activists in organics 30 years ago, but it wasn't until the mainstream consumer market actually put their money down that the growth in organic growing and processing has increased really exponentially. But at the same time, it's only providing food for 5 to 10% of the whole mainstream consumers. So we've got a long way to grow just with organic. And the first step is education. We really have to know where the food's coming from and how safe is it really. Is it safe to export or is it safe to eat?
And again, that was Frank Moreland of Edible Strategies, which is located in Fanny Bay on Vancouver Island. If you're just tuning in, this is Deconstructing Dinner, a new weekly program that will dissect the food we purchase and place into our bodies. Tonight we are finding out from a number of British Columbians why they think we should be deconstructing our dinner. I was joined earlier in the studio today by Nelson area resident Abra Brin. Abra is the chair of the certification committee for the Kootenai Organic Grower Society. She sits on the board of Nelson's local Kootenai Cooperative Natural Food Store. Abra was also instrumental in forming the BC Food Systems Network, which was designed to connect people all over the province involved in community-level action related to food. And here is Abra Brin responding to the question, why deconstruct our dinner?
For me, the reason we should be deconstructing our dinner is because our food is inescapably tied into a globalized and industrialized food system with very few exceptions. Because of that, for me, there are social, economic, environmental, and cultural justice implications for what it is that we consume and don't and choose to not consume. The cultural justice implications of the food system we currently are tied into are around the fact that food traditionally was part of how we help define ourselves as individuals and as a culture. And with the crazy food system that we currently have, most people have lost their ties to their traditional foods, not only just eating them, but also knowing how to grow them, how to process them, how to prepare them, how to even serve them. And I think that's quite sad, and it's a real loss of culture. To identify our culture as being, you know, fast food nation, to quote a book title, is, I think, quite a sad state of affairs. The economic justice implications for me is that food has become a commodity when it is a basic human need, and therefore some would say it's a basic human right. If you don't have food, if you don't have money, you can't generally access food, and that ties into both access to land as well as access to food. And it's also a problem, the economic piece of it also is tied into the fact that we've put very little value on our food, even though food is something we put in our bodies every day and has a huge impact, I think, on our growth, if we're children, on our health, if we're adults, on our quality of life generally. And yet in Canada, we're living with a culture where there was a cheap food policy set nationally back in the 60s, and it has really pervaded our society so that everybody is seeking for the cheapest possible food, and yet we'll spend a lot more money on our entertainment, our clothing, our toys. We won't think about looking for the lowest possible price, and yet that tends to be the dominant approach to food, even though it's such an intimate thing that we do, eating every day. In terms of environmental justice repercussions, there all kinds of crazy things like air miles and greenhouse gas repercussions of shipping food all around the world, whether it's by boat or plane or truck, and the fact that most food travels a ridiculous amount of miles before it lands on our plate. Most of the stats are around 1,600 miles or something crazy like that. There's also environmental repercussions of doing monoculture agriculture, which is how most of our food is produced, and so there are huge problems with producing one crop over vast acreage. It is a sitting duck, for lack of a better word, for crops and pests, and so it becomes intensive chemical agriculture, which then pollutes the water and puts toxin into the food system from the bottom up. There's also problems with the fact that a lot of the intensive production also is heavily dependent on water. And so, for instance, in I think it was 2005, production in California went down by 20% because they're running out of water. They're tapping too deep into their water systems. And given that California produces 80% of North America's fresh fruits and vegetables, that's a rather frightening statistic and reality. But I think for me, the thing that strikes closest to home is the social justice issue of our food system and the fact that what we choose to eat, what we expect to have available to us, can be having a huge detrimental impact to someone somewhere else around the world. And for me, I can't escape the knowledge, nor do I want to, that I live on a global community, and I want the people in India and Bolivia and Moscow and Salmo to all be able to get their food needs met. And when we are being supplied with the same kinds of crops year-round, obviously they're not all coming from here. And the reality is that many, many peasant farmers have been pushed off their land all over the world in order to produce crops for export markets instead of crops for feeding themselves and their families. And I think that's probably the saddest reality of this globalized food system. The chain stores tend to be constrained by policies from their head office that requires that food, even if it's going to end up here, if it starts here, it still is required to be shipped to Calgary or to Burnaby or someplace like that before they sort it and send it back, which is kind of a silly way to try and deal with local food. I do know there have been some managers at some of the chain stores who have jeopardized their position by agreeing to take backdoor deliveries, as they call them, instead of requiring that the producer ship it out of the community first.
And that was Abra Brin of the Kootenai Organic Growers Society. Going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be right back to hear some more responses to why British Columbians should be deconstructing their dinner. Back to Deconstructing Dinner, a new weekly program that will dissect the food we purchase and place into our bodies. This will be a weekly program that will focus on more specific food issues in weeks to come, and tonight's show is an introduction to the show itself. That short musical break was a performance by Misha Blam of his tune Memory. That one was recorded in the former Yugoslavia. And moving along, we are introducing this new show on CJLY by posing the question to British Columbians, why should we be deconstructing our dinner? Next, we are going to hear from Kim Stansfield from Summerland over in the Okanagan. Kim sits on the board of the SSFPA, also known as the Small Scale Food Processors Association. Kim also operates a 10-acre farm where she grows grapes and creates products from those grapes. Over the phone yesterday morning, Kim responded to the question, why deconstruct our dinner?
First of all, consumers need to have a genuine choice about what they eat, and they need access to good food, because good food is the basis of good health. And the more they know where their food comes from, then they can make those choices. The increase in convenience foods and prepackaged goods has led to certainly a decline in farmers' incomes and making it a lot more difficult to earn a living in this industry. It's also given us as consumers less choice. We don't have a choice in 100 different kinds of tomatoes. We have a choice of one tomato that travels well and holds up well, not a tomato that necessarily tastes flavorful. We need to support regionally based small-scale food processing systems in order for the local economies and small communities and large communities to survive. One of the big issues with small-scale processors and farmers is insurance issues. And I think you don't have to be in the food processing industry to know how the cost of insurance has risen over the last few years. You only need to be a resident of Kelowna when the fires happened to know that the insurance industry, the costs have gone up substantially, and these costs affect me as a small producer. Government regulations sometimes become barriers because small-scale processors don't have the finances and the resources to necessarily upgrade equipment or have the appropriate cooling equipment that they may need. There's also a sad lack of information out there. Information often goes to the large processor, but it's a trickle-down effect to a small-scale food processor. There are organizations, such as one that I belong to, the Small-Scale Food Processor Association, which is an advocacy group for small-scale processors and helps support and represent the interests of the small-scale processor. One of the things that the Small-Scale Food Processor Association is trying to do, apart from representing the interests of the small-scale processor, is to establish regional identities so that people can say, oh, this is an Okanagan apple, or this is from the Cowichan Valley, this is from Naramata, even as narrow as that. And we provide relevant and timely information and create programs to support the development and growth of small-scale food processors. One really great thing that's happened recently that we've been able to do is we've been able to create a web-based specialty foods directory for British Columbia. So all specialty food processors and processors can go to the directory and fill out the form. And basically, this provides new markets for the small-scale processor. Food service buyers can go to this resource and look for local quality specialty foods. So I encourage anyone out there, it's free to sign on. All you have to do is, if you go to our website, www.ssfpa.net, you'll find the links to go to this specialty foods directory. Buy local. Support your local economy. You're doing more than one thing when you buy local. You support all kinds of initiatives in your area. You support jobs in the area, as well as you get fresh, quality food. And it is, while our system is not sustainable, it's a small step toward that direction, and that should be our goal. I think, like any good movement, it starts from the grassroots, and we as consumers have to demand local food in our grocery stores. One of the things that always irritates me is to go into my local grocery store in peak raspberry season, when we have local raspberries, and find raspberries from California that are, you know, half the price that we can sell them for.
And that was Kim Stansfield of the Small Scale Food Processors Association, who joined me on the phone yesterday here in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio. This is Deconstructing Dinner, and the question for tonight's inaugural show is, why deconstruct our dinner? Next up, we'll hear from Gwen Chapman. Gwen is an associate professor in nutritional sciences at the University of British Columbia's Faculty of Land and Food Systems. Some of Gwen's research involves how our everyday food practices and concerns are shaped by socially constructed notions about food, about health, about our bodies and social roles. Gwen joined me over the phone from Vancouver earlier today.
I think that we in Canada and in North America in general have an interesting relationship with food right now. On the one hand, people have a certain level of concern and suspicion about food. I think we worry about food a lot. And one of the studies that I have been looking at a bit recently was work done by a Dr. Rosen, a psychologist in the United States, and they compared sort of the people's attitudes towards food in North America, particularly the States in that case, with France. And they found that the people in North America have this very sort of worried attitude toward food, whereas people in France had a much more relaxed and pleasure attitude toward food. Food was important for them because of pleasure. And yet, despite all of the worry in North America, we actually don't do as well as people in France in terms of nutrition-related health problems. So I think somehow we're missing the boat when it comes to the kinds of things we think about with food. And instead of worrying as much about some of the risk factors in food, we need to look at food more holistically and recognize that food is important to us for many reasons. Yes, it's related to health, but it's also intricately interwoven in the social fabric of our lives. So some of the research that I've been doing has been looking at the role of food within families and how families interact around food, how we make decisions around food, so how we do or don't pay attention to people's likes and dislikes, how children influence their parents, how parents try to shape what their children are eating. I think that when we think about food, we think about it in a fairly narrow way, that people tend to think about the nutrients, the health, perhaps risks related to food, and we're not as aware of how our food choices are shaped by the environment that we live in, particularly in terms of the kinds of foods that are available, as well as our cultural history, what we grew up with, what we see as related to maybe our ethnic identity, as well as our family context. So at the same time that we're worried about sort of the nutrient value of food, or eating too much junk food, or eating too much processed food, or eating food that has been produced in ways that may not be as healthful for us, we see it as an individual matter that we just need to make better choices as individuals, instead of recognizing how the whole food system is shaping those choices, the foods that are available to us in stores, the foods that are advertised, and so on. So by deconstructing dinner, if we get a better understanding of where the food is coming from and why we're making the food choices we're making, that may help us to not only change our individual choices, but work in ways to change the food system so that it becomes easier to have a more healthful, sustainable, socially just diet.
Welcome back to Deconstructing Dinner on Kootenai Co-op Radio, Nelson, British Columbia. Tonight, we're hoping to get a glimpse into the issues that this show will attempt to tackle in weeks to come. To do so, I've posed the question, why deconstruct our dinner, to a number of British Columbians who all share one thing in common, and that is that they are concerned about the state of our food systems here in this province. We just heard from Gwen Chapman, associate professor at UBC's Faculty of Land and Food Systems. Quickly want to remind listeners that if any of the information on this show sparks any interest to maybe know a little bit more about the groups my guests are affiliated with, you will be able to find that information at www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner. In continuing with this question, why deconstruct our dinner and understand all the implications of our food choices, we're going to hear next from Barbara Seed. Barbara is a public health nutritionist and also a PhD student in food policy at City University in London, England, where her advisor, Dr. Tim Lang, is internationally renowned in food policy issues. Barbara is a registered dietitian and was also a member of the Vancouver Food Policy Council. Barbara joined me over the phone from Vancouver just yesterday.
If we take apart and analyze our food, we might then start to recognize the value of food in our lives. And the keyword value is something I will keep coming back to. Food is something that's, in this day and age, is so central, but we take it for granted in so many ways. And it's a shame because it has the ability to connect us to ourselves, to each other, and to the environment. Not recognizing the value and importance of food has its costs in the form of health care, antibiotic resistance, environmental degradation, increased food safety concerns, to name just a few areas. And if we focus on health concerns alone, recognizing the value of food in our lives spills into many areas. And as a dietitian, you know, foremost, I guess, one of the things that I initially think of is our own personal health. So, of course, the many health benefits that you have from eating a good diet, but also collectively when you look at nutritional health, that's no small thing, the potential for disease prevention if we are all eating well, and, of course, health care costs, health care eating up the largest percentage of our spending is pretty significant. In terms of helping us to have a healthier relationship with our food and to help us value our bodies more, so many of us have a messed up relationship with food and our bodies. We have this love-hate relationship with food where we no longer value food as a way to nurture and respect our bodies, but maybe as a necessary evil or a vehicle for short-term pleasure. If you think about the feeling of sort of stuffing some fries down, you know, your throat as you're driving your car along, thinking, I really shouldn't be eating these, but, you know, I've got to get to the next meeting, versus sitting down and having a hot bowl of homemade vegetable soup and thinking about, you know, what you're doing for your body as you're doing that. It's a real sign of, again, valuing your body. When you look broader than just ourselves, there's so many other areas. The health of agricultural workers is very key, whether that's locally or internationally. And when you think about the fruit that we're eating from Central America, for example, and hearing reports of congenital malformations with agricultural workers who are exposed to high levels of pesticides, we've got to think that's, you know, our concern as well as theirs. And whether it comes back to us directly or indirectly, it should be a concern for us. The influence of food security on our environment is important and reflects, again, back on our health, whether it's genetically modified foods or CO2 emissions in terms of how far food is traveling to get to us. The quality of our water and soil is important to our own personal health. And finally, for our community, for centuries, food has been a means of livelihood, a way to connect socially, and a way to show others that they're valued. When this breaks down, I think that we may be suggesting that people aren't valued. And we've got lots of examples of this. Say, for example, food banks. When we pull out, you know, the expired food out of the back of our cupboards and send it to the food bank, or we send the day-old donuts to the food bank, we're saying that these people don't deserve quality food and deserve less than what the rest of us do. And I believe that it's no one's first choice to go to the food bank, and no one's going to take advantage of the system by going to the food bank. And even though many of us agree that we would prefer not to see food banks at all, again, it's going to reflect back in healthcare costs. A U.S. guru, Joan
Joan Gossow, who said, save the farmers first and reform them later, so that we need to help the farmers to stay alive in our areas. And if we want them to look at different methods of production, then we first need to help them out by supporting them. We need to move ourselves beyond the idea of being just passive food consumers, where the idea of our power is based on the idea of just accepting or rejecting certain products. And really, that's a false sense of power anyway. And we need to move to the idea of being food citizens, where we take an active role in determining how our food system is shaped. And this moves us towards the idea of food democracy, where we have rights and responsibilities in relation to our food supply.
And that was Barbara Seed, a PhD student in food policy and a member and past chair of the BC Community Nutritionists Council Standing Committee on Food Security. When discussing issues surrounding our country's food supply and the systems holding these supplies together, it's common to come across the name Kathleen Neen, who along with her husband Brewster publish and distribute their monthly food systems newsletter, The Ram's Horn. Kathleen is also instrumental in coordinating the BC Food Systems Network and is the editor of BC Organic Grower, a quarterly magazine of the Certified Organic Associations of British Columbia. Kathleen is joining us from her home in Sorrento. Thanks for joining us, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
After listening to the show from your home in Sorrento, you are tuned in, are you?
I am, though I've got to say the internet was a little fuzzy at times. I think I missed a couple of points, but by and large, I think I got most of it.
What can you maybe add to this all-encompassing question on tonight's show? Why should British Columbians be deconstructing our dinner?
Well, I would say, first of all, that you've had an incredibly powerful and appropriate range of comments already. And I think that what I would probably, I like to start with thinking, Socrates, I believe it was, said the unexamined life is not worth living. And in that sense, perhaps the unexamined meal is not worth eating. I think one of the reasons why people don't want to deconstruct their food is because we're afraid of what we're going to find. I don't think it's any mystery to anybody who eats food in North America in the 21st century that the food system is largely controlled by a few conglomerates who are not under local control, that most of the food comes from a long way away, and that an awful lot of it is not very good for our health. So I think people, knowing that, and knowing, as Gwen Chapman, I think, quite appropriately pointed out, that part of what the system has done is to systematically remove the capacity for choice about what you eat from people, we're really scared of coming face-to-face with what someone has called the forces that make us fat, sick, and poor. We will feel that if we start looking at it, then we're going to feel even worse about ourselves than we do now. So what I would say, perhaps to sum up what a lot of other people have been pointing towards, is that the main reason for deconstructing our food and deconstructing our food system is that it's fun, it's enjoyable, it's a way of connecting ourselves to our own communities, to our own families, to our own bodies, to our own cultures, to our own selves, in a way which is rewarding. And I know you said you weren't going to do any recipes on the show, and I do understand that. But, you know, it's around that sort of thing, sharing recipes, sharing food, sharing stories about food, that people, I think, can communicate in ways which are, how can I say this, non-political. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like this is where we are ourselves with each other. And then we get into the issues, and then we've got to get out there and start struggling. And certainly all the struggle issues that people mentioned are of critical importance. So the other piece that will happen when we deconstruct our dinner is that we will discover not just that our food system is controlled by a shrinking number of extremely powerful transnational corporations whose job, of course, is nothing to do with nutrition, or feeding the hungry of the world, for that matter, but has to do with returning a profit to their shareholders on the quarter, that we will discover that. We will also discover all the wonderful things that are going on locally and ways of connecting with the people who are growing food, producing food, processing food, selling food, preparing food in our own communities, which will, again, be very, very rewarding. So, yes, there's the political work, and I don't think we can possibly shrink from it, of looking at the policies at both the municipal, the local school board, the provincial, the federal level, the health authority level, all the policies that are imposing and supporting the what I call the industrial food system. And we do that at the same time as we enjoy and celebrate food.
What are the most influential decisions you can maybe shed light on that are made at a federal level that affect our food choices here in British Columbia?
Well, the major one, I suppose, is the one that Abra alluded to about agricultural policy, which has been to develop and support a food system which is essentially producing commodities for export and which is not geared toward the production of food to feed the local population. And, you know, there's a myriad of different regulations and subsidies and policies and support systems, all of which need to be examined in that light. One piece might be the fact that the federal government is withdrawn from independent research and monitoring of food, so that now, for example, when Monsanto wants to stick in another GMO crop, all Health Canada can do is assess the information that Monsanto gives it, and they have no capacity to do any independent research. So the independent research, which is how, for example, crops like canola got produced in the first place, how we developed the main mainstay of our food system in Canada, which is wheat, was done all at publicly funded laboratories by scientists working for the public and in the public interest and sharing their information freely with one another. Now everything is owned and controlled by transnational corporations outside of the country, and Canada has no way of getting at that stuff. So that's another piece. It would be really nice if the Canadian Food Inspection Agency didn't have a dual mandate to, on the one hand, assess and approve novel foods, as they call them, genetically modified foods, and on the other hand, to promote them. That conflict of interest could be easily disposed of. Another really important piece has to do with seeds, the policies at the federal level, which hamper the ability of farmers to reproduce and breed and grow their own seeds, is another issue that happens at the federal level and where policy is made. That's only a few. We could go on and on, but I don't want to bore people.
Well, Kathleen, we do only have one more minute left here on the show. Maybe to kind of wrap things up, you can maybe comment on the role the media has played up until now.
I think the biggest problem is that the mass media, which is not surprising given who controls the mass media, has bought in body and soul to the notion of technology as being the key driver of the economy, agriculture, and everything else. That's not what drives agriculture. Agriculture is driven by people who are producing food for their own community, and that needs to be understood as the basis of food policy, and it needs to be the perspective from which the media approach new developments in agriculture. It needs to be the perspective from which they approach questions like marketing board supports, et cetera, et cetera.
Kathleen, given the influence you have had, I guess, in promoting awareness of the issues surrounding our food, it was great to have you on tonight's show. I think it was really important to get your voice out there. I look forward to having you on future shows, and I want to thank you again for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
That was Kathleen Neen, editor of the Ram's Horn, a food systems newsletter based in Sorrento, British Columbia, also editor of the BC Organic Grower. That was this week's Deconstructing Dinner on Kootenai Co-op Radio, broadcasting to you from Nelson, British Columbia. I've been your host, John Steinman. Thank my technical assistant tonight, Terry Brennan, for manning the dials. All of those affiliated with the station are volunteers, and financial support for this station is received through membership, donations, and sponsorship from local businesses. For more information on the station or to become a member, you can visit www.cjy.net or dial 250-352-9600. And should you have any comments about today's show or perhaps want to learn more, you can visit www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner. Till next week.